the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this gets pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What's up, Bison fans, and welcome to a very special season preview edition of the Bison Report Radio podcast. And the voice that you hear this evening will not be from number three, Trevor Gebhardt. Trevor is still going to be around this season occasionally, but in his full-time capacity has been replaced for the first time, really, by someone who actually lives here. That is number 57 in your program, number one in your hearts, Zach Willis. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I'm ready to talk to Bison Nation. Let's get this thing going.
All right. If you want to kind of explain your Bison bona fides, even, you know, going back to being a fan, you know, before you strapped up, just kind of explain to everybody who you are.
Yeah, so it actually started, like we talked about before we even started recording, with Steve Walker and Cole Heckendorf. He was featured today on Dom Izzo's Countdown. But them beating Sam Houston State was my first formidable memory of being a Bison fan, going in that last drive, beating them with 4 seconds left. Kind of just fell in love then. I was the kid walking up buying $20 GA tickets 10 minutes before the game, and you know, I just love Bison football. And then, obviously, live my dream out of being a player. Was there from 2017 to 2021. And then called it quits and decided to come over here and start talking about the boys.
Love it. Love it. All right. We've got an exciting announcement as well. Do we not?
I would say we do.
All right. Folks, we are going to... I don't know if we're going to lock into a day. I would guess... the Friday before the game, that would be my guess when we're going to drop these. But we are going into business with Big Deck Barbecue Company. And explain kind of what that is to people. And if you haven't heard yet, you guys are missing out. But explain, you know, kind of the pandemic and you guys getting started and really how all that came to be.
Yeah, well, me and my old man, we were bored in the house like everybody else in the world. Yeah, exactly. We were locked inside and we're like, hey, man, we have these recipes. We have nothing else to do. Let's start selling it. You know, we had 30 bottles of stuff for that first night, and we had over 50 orders the next day. And we're like, well, what do we do now? So it's kind of taken a life of its own ever since then, and it's been a lot of fun. We're excited to show you guys how we use our products. And, you know, I didn't get this big by eating bad-tasting food, so – we're gonna get out there and show you some of the delicious stuff we've been cooking.
Yeah, we're very excited. We're gonna call this the Big Deck Tailgate Show, and it's gonna be obviously presented to you by Bison Report. It's gonna be hosted on Bison Report, and Zach and I are gonna get on the grill. We're gonna get on various cooking apparatuses. I don't know if you know it'll be one time it might be a propane grill, might be my Traeger. Could be some stuff inside, some slow cook stuff might be in the oven, might be Tyson's got some big dog stuff in West Fargo. We might have to go film in West Fargo, but we're going to be bringing a new tailgate recipe using Big Deck's products to you every week. So we're really, really excited about this.
Yeah, I think it's awesome because, you know, we get a lot of questions on how to use our stuff. And we're going to, like you said, cover that whole range of whether you have a crock pot or you have a giant pit boss smoker.
Right. we're going to hit it all.
Yeah, everybody's in between. So we're excited to show you what we bring out every Saturday. Like I said, everything tastes good we cook, so you're going to have to trust us on that.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. I want to get into it, Zach, if you will, on the old Bison Report studio monitor there. Bring up the schedule real quick because I want to get into kind of this year's schedule. I think a lot of folks are a little disappointed, just because. And look, I think a ton of that has to do with the fact that last year, you know, would have been awesome with the opening game, you know, with with Oregon and kind of being getting off of that cupcakey feel, because I think you kind of can't help but get that cupcakey feel from this particular setup. I think, you know, they'll be four touchdown favorites against Albany next week. Probably the same, everybody remembers, 52-0 against Valparaiso in 2004, NDSU's first Division I game. And then at Towson, which is a road game, but historically that hasn't meant a whole heck of a lot to the Bison. Talk to me about this slate and kind of what your feel is here.
You know, as a former player, I might be talking out of turn here. I'm going to get a call from the head man up there. But you see these three teams and you're like, okay, cool. We got a grind coming up in the Valley. We're happy to see Albany, Valpo, and Towson.
Sure.
Obviously, any given Saturday, anything can happen. But, you know, there's not a lot of non-con stuff that moves the needle like playing Oregon.
Right.
The first week.
Yeah.
So we're kind of just looking forward to we'll get there eventually out of the non-con. But those first four coming up in the Valley look pretty sweet.
Yeah, and I think that's maybe a good thing for this team, because – you were going to have last year a group that had really been together for a long time. Had COVID never happened, you know, you would have had, Dylan at left tackle with Cordell at right and one of the better NDSU offensive lines in a lot of time. You'd have Trey. I'm not sure how much it affected Cofield, but you would have had potentially Trey and Cofield and Kobe and all of the guys that you saw tote the rock with Christian and Phoenix and you know, Josh and Gindy and all the guys. I mean, it would have been a heck of an offense. And defensively, you would still have had Josh Hayes, which I think puts the defense in a little bit different mindset. But you would have had a defending 16-0 national championship group ready to go into Autzen. Now you've got a team that's going to have a brand new quarterback. Or not, but you still have moving parts. You've got a returning Phoenix Sproles. You have a tailback situation that I think is murky at best, and honestly, kind of the best possible way, but it's murky at best.
Right.
And then you've got a defense that I think between some of the plays given up by the corners and then really the punch in the mouth that South Dakota State threw at them, I think you've got a bad taste in the defense's mouth. So to have three, and you know, we're going to catch hell for this, but three warm-up games, if you will, or three games where you are going to be heavily favored and you can really work on you.
Yeah.
Cause you're not game. I mean, you are game planning Albany, but you're not game planning Albany.
Right. I mean, there's bigger fish to fry coming up.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, we're going to catch hell, but you know, it's just a matter of fact, you know, I'm excited. The only thing that gets me excited is seeing Albany and going out to Towson. It's new faces. It's, you know, what I'd consider new blood going into the non-con.
Sure. Okay. All right. Let's talk about this start and just the baptism that is October 2nd at North Dakota. Boy, they ripped that Band-Aid right off. first game in Grand Forks, I would guess since 2003. That would be my guess. I know that it was the last nickel, the overtime loss. Kyle Steph is tackled in the backfield.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing but pain. only pain.
It only hurts.
Yes. But I mean that's a game when Gene Taylor negotiated, you know, they thought, well, we should get one here, and before Gene left us for Iowa and then for Kansas State, he said, no, you shouldn't. you want to play us, you come play us. Yep. We're not going to Grand Forks. Well, now they're a conference opponent, and you don't get to tell conference opponents that you're not coming to their place.
Yeah.
So what do you think the mentality is going to be? I mean, you've got, you know, a Fargo-Moorhead kid in Otis Weah that's, and frankly, a kind of a ridiculous Moorhead pipeline.
Yeah, seriously.
That has gone on up there. And you've got a group of young men that I think were really feeling themselves coming into Fargo and then got that ass kicked.
Yeah.
But now you're feeling like you've got a lot of what that UND team was coming back. I believe the quarterback's healthy In contrast to South Dakota State, who did lose their QB in the national championship game.
Right.
So that the quarterback's healthy, and you're feeling like now it's on our turf. I think UND really felt like, and I know there were some prognosticators in the Fargo area that not only thought UND was going to win, that they were going to win big. I think confidence has to be at an all-time high for UND looking at that conference opener.
It is every time we play them. It doesn't matter where it's going to be. It's their little brother they're going to get whooped.
I'm talking about UND, how they must feel hosting this game.
Right. Yeah, I know. It's like I said, it's every time they think, no matter where it's at, they have a shot. And like I said, it's every given Saturday. But, you know, it's definitely going to be a weird feeling of playing that game up there. You know, I would imagine it's another boost of confidence for them. Because everybody likes playing at home. So I'm excited for that one.
All right. Then we've got, I'm using the pejorative we. I don't want to hear it. I don't. You're not on the team. I don't care.
Yeah, we.
We are going to be there. So we've got.
Yeah. Part of the team.
Yeah.
As a nation.
So then it's Northern Iowa at home. Homecoming.
Yep.
That's a big one. Although I think it's probably, I don't know how high on Northern Iowa folks are. And then you've got kind of a, not necessarily a coast, but you got to feel pretty good about at Illinois State, although I would assume their program is in a better position than last spring because things just kind of went off the railroad tracks for them.
Yeah.
But Missouri State and Indiana State at home, you feel really good about that.
Yep.
And then kind of deep into the season, November 8th, probably not going to be really nice in Brookings.
I can guarantee it won't be.
Yeah.
It just happens like that every time.
Sure. And then at Youngstown State versus South Dakota. What are your thoughts on that South Dakota State game kind of not closing the season, I guess, and being early November? I suppose they don't want you outside in Brookings on November 20th.
Right.
But that's going to be for a lot of marbles, even though there are two games left.
Yeah, I know it's you like to have that game at the end of the season because it's almost like a cap. It's like a do or die. You know, we're playing for the Valley for this one. So it is kind of a strange feeling, but, you know, like you said, it's just that mystique of playing in Brookings, and it's going to be bad out, and obviously the bad blood with the marker. It's kind of interesting, but, you know, I like the timing of it, honestly, because then – you're not recovering for a whole week because you just played the hardest game of your life going into hopefully a bye week into the playoffs.
Yeah, it'll be interesting too. I mean, that game is fascinating to me. With the way that South Dakota State disrespected the program, standing on the logo, horns down, you know, all this. I mean, they've won three of the last five regular season meetings.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, you ask Bison Nation, that's unacceptable. And yeah. So... and the way, I mean, truly, you know, I give people a hard time, but like the Jake Winicky push off in the south end zone,
mm-hmm.
that you know, Easton Stick turns it over like four times, very non-characteristic. You can kind of talk your way through some of the losses to South Dakota State.
Right.
You cannot talk your way through what happened to North Dakota State at home with a lot on the line at the end of last season.
No, yeah, there's no excuses to be made for that one.
So that to me, especially going down there, and then their memories of the last time down there, they've got Pat McAfee in the house. They've got College Game Day in the house.
Yep.
And then you've got Adam Cofield in his own territory, 4th and 1, 80 yards to the crib.
Yep.
So that's going to be a fascinating one. Right, so in 2019... I mean, I know it was, and I'll let the coaches know. Like, Zach and I used to work out together at Dynasty, and I've known him for a long time. He did not feed me information. I just want everybody to know. I did not have Zach, you know, spying for me. And coaches wonder all the time how I hear this or that. It wasn't Zach. It really, truly wasn't. Correct? I mean, I'm not lying.
No, I'm right. I'm glad we're clearing up that rumor.
Yeah.
Because I think that's believed somewhere.
I know. Yeah. So anyway, but to me, like, yes, it was declared an open competition. Zeb, Trey Lance and Noah Sanders, I believe, were, you know, and Holden, I think, hadn't left yet.
I think Holden left that's after that spring, I believe.
Sure. So it's, you know, deemed an open competition, but I think everybody kind of knew, or at least anybody that had been at practice or sort of even just had offhand conversations with anybody on staff, because you just couldn't mention number five to anyone on the offensive side of the ball without their eyes lighting up. You knew he was that dude.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously something special about five. There's a reason he's playing in San Francisco right now, and that stuff radiates without even being able to put on paper why.
Yeah.
You know, Zeb had a hell of a camp that fall, but, you know, it's Trey Lance.
Yeah, right, exactly.
He just fell victim to that.
Exactly. No, it for sure. And so that I could kind of see coming. I thought this was a legitimate competition. You know, I didn't really know what I thought, because, you know, you go look at 24/7 Sports, and right now, from a Stars perspective, Cam Miller's the highest. I mean, I would go back to Easton Stick. I think of his actual recruitment, I think Easton Stick is the biggest recruiting win in NDSU history, and that's not revisionist history based on how good he ended up being. It's who they were actually up against.
Yeah.
But Cam Miller is the highest rated recruit in North Dakota State history.
Yeah.
By 24/7 standards. So he's a big deal, man. And mm-hmm. and I understand, but Easton, even when, if you go back to he and I's conversation at the Carson Wentz game, the one next to the water cooler that was not high audio quality, but you take what you can get if you can get an NFL quarterback to sit down with you for 10 minutes.
Beggars can't be choosers.
Absolutely. And Easton said, like, he told me he couldn't imagine what he would have looked like having to go out there as a true freshman. And you even think about 6 games into his redshirt freshman year, the training wheels that were on that offense. Mm-hmm. They ran the ball, whether it was with him or with a tailback. If they were running 60 plays, it was 51 runs and 9 passes.
Yep.
And so he told us, like, do not write off Cam Miller. Do not, and not that Cam's performance was even that bad, but you have to understand that most of the NDSU quarterbacks that you have seen them at such later stages in their career. You think about even when you saw Brock Jensen. This fifth or sixth game, you know, Jose goes down. It's the fifth or sixth game of his redshirt year. It's 18, 19 months into being but part of the program. Not 8 months, not 5 months. Yep. Not, you know, and you think about, shoot, when you saw Carson Wentz, yes, it was Iowa State. It was also the beginning of his fourth year.
Right.
And even Trey Lance got the full redshirt experience behind the winningest quarterback in the history of the FCS, and basically what equated to a warm-up game against Butler, against a non-scholarship Division I.
Right.
So you can't discount Cam Miller.
Not at all.
And I think Cole Payton's going to be a special kid. Mm-hmm. But I think your quarterback is going to be Quincy Patterson.
I think we're on the same page with
okay.
that. I would agree.
And by the time this bad boy comes out, Matt might have even announced a starter. I can't keep up with the reality show. By the way, the fact that the quarterback competition is like a reality show on social media, it just, I can't even right now. It's not that I disagree with it. It's that it absolutely blows me away.
Yeah, the fact that everybody's getting this much access into the program, it even blows my mind, and I was there this spring.
Right. It's... and I think Scott does an amazing job, and I think that's part of the reason why, because of the vast improvement of the product, of the video product that they're able to put out there.
Yeah,
that's why I think they have maybe opened the door a little bit, because they know Scott will do such a good job with it. But crazy, man. It's just absolutely wild.
It's nuts.
And unprecedented. But I think we both think that ultimately Quincy Patterson is going to be the guy.
Yeah, I would think so. Just, you know, we can get into more of the nuts and bolts, but, you know, obviously age and experience are one thing.
Yep.
Quincy's ran. Now he's been through the offense. He's been through a couple installs now. But just the fact that he's played college football for longer than Cam has, it's a true advantage of when you're going through a position battle like that.
And from we talk about recruiting, you talk about stars.
He's the highest ranked recruit in the history of North Dakota State football, and it's not particularly close.
Yeah.
Four-star QB, high four-star, you know, on the borderline of being a five-star kid, wins the award for top African-American high school quarterback in the country. Mentioned to me in an episode of BRTV that's already out that he was getting Michael Vick comparisons when he got to Tech. This kid has, I think, from a raw perspective, almost Trey-level gifts.
Yeah,
from a side, and I don't want to get crazy hyperbolic with that, but Zach, back me up and or don't. You don't have to agree with me, but I mean, height, weight, speed, and just raw arm talent.
They're almost identical when you look at them on paper. Okay. And then when you watch them throw footballs, it makes a different sound. I mean, you're around NFL guys. You're around Aaron Rodgers. You're a GOAT.
Yeah.
you know it sounds different
when
a guy like that's throwing the ball. And that's just what you get with Quincy. I mean, he's 6'4", 245 pounds, rocked up with a six-pack. And it's like, where'd you come from? You're not like the rest of us.
Yeah. Why aren't you rushing the passer? Like, what is going on here?
Go block the D end.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, and I think what you have there is just this incredibly moldable piece of clay in that you go look at freshman year at Tech, sophomore year at Tech, and that's what everybody's worried about, 44% completions, 45% completions. On paper, he looks like a run, not a run first quarterback. He looks like a run only quarterback.
Right.
That's, you know, on paper, that's what he looks like. Mm-hmm. So if you've got this kid with a rocket arm, a couple of accuracy issues, maybe it's footwork, maybe it's delivery, maybe it's just a lack of reps. Well, you're never going to have a lack of reps at North Dakota State. They make damn sure of that.
Yep.
And why don't we put him with the best quarterback coach in the country?
Yeah, he's not with a guy who would, you know, make him regress in that. In that category, he's Randy Hedberg's resume speaks for itself. So he's in a good spot to if we're going to fix some of those issues.
I think you can then kind of anticipate an expansion of the playbook because, you know, Quincy was around learning in the spring, and now he's been through all the installs, and I know. You know, they felt like they could do more of the quarterback run stuff with Cam than when Zeb was in the game. But now I think the entire playbook is back open because, to me, I really would like to see him complete 58 to 60% of his passes as kind of a baseline.
Right.
But there's not a throw he can't physically make. Mm-hmm. And there's not a running play you can't call for him.
Exactly.
So, to me, that really opens up what they are going to potentially be able to do.
Yeah, I mean, even if you go back to Trey's season, it started off like, okay, here's what we think we can handle. You saw what you saw against Butler. It progressed as the season went on. It was like, okay, this kid is special. He can handle it. And by the time we played JMU in Frisco, he had full reins of the playbook. And, you know, I think that's something that, you know, you go through growing pains with a new quarterback every time. But you get a different element when it's a kid Quincy's size back there running, you know, between the tackles or whatever you need him to do.
All right, let's talk about tailback because that's really interesting to me. Could you, on the Bison Report Studios monitor, could you go back to the roster and potentially sort by position? Because this one is incredibly interesting to me. I thought they were going to be fine a season ago, but that's because I am and have been deeply, madly in love with the idea of Seth Wilson. I thought he was such a complete back when healthy, and then three carries into his true breakout season. And it's not that I have no respect for Adam Cofield or have no love for Adam Cofield. I thought that with Seth Wilson leading the way, and then Kobe Johnson and Jalen Bussey getting some of those other touches and potentially, you know, working in a bigger back like Dom Ganella and ultimately Hunter Lipke. By the way, folks, official, breaking news. If we had a breaking news sounder, I would have you hit it. We don't. It's Lipke.
It's Lipke.
Lipke, not Loopke, Lipke.
I didn't even know that.
I know. We got from our guy Ryan Peralt in North Dakota State Sports Information Department. Hunter let him know last week that it's Lipke and that people have been saying it wrong since he was in fifth grade. And he finally got up the courage to tell them that it's wrong. It's Hunter Lipke.
Guy could beat people up, whoever he wanted, by the time he's in fifth grade. Exactly. And he didn't take the time to correct any of them. What are you doing?
All right, so tailback, really interesting to me. You've got, I mean, if you had to guess, would you guess that Kobe Johnson takes the first rep? Like, I mean, what it, would that be from that standpoint, assuming Seth Wilson isn't going to play, like if you had to pick RB1, would it be Kobe?
Yeah, for what it's worth in Bison football, like you never know who the running back starter is. But I would say it would be Kobe, yeah.
Right. So then you've got the guys that helped carry the load last year. We're not going to include Lipke in this because he's been in the Chiefs room all fall. He told us that at Media Day, and I think that makes the most sense. Not that he won't touch football because I think he will, but he right now is a Chief, not a machine. So the guys that helped carry the load last year, Dom Gannella, and then Jalen Bussey would be the other big one. Then you've got kind of two, I think, really interesting guys in a very highly thought of player in TK Marshall out of the Twin Cities. I think folks were really excited about him. And you've got your war horse in 6'1", 225-pound Tamarick Williams out of SMU, who's going to have 2 years left to play here at North Dakota State. And I think that was one of the big deals that they were missing. I know they did play Lipke, but that kind of power back, your Ojeri, your King Frazier, that style of player, the only guy that they've ever had that could really do it all was Croc. And even he split time with Ojeri until he was a senior.
Right.
So when you lose Seth Wilson and you've got kind of the more jitterbug guys like Bussey and Kobe as your primary options, I think it took a little bit of the A-gap stuff away. And then you've got, I mean, some other interesting deals too, in that you got Mitchell Cardis, who's sunning people on social media. And also I think people are intrigued by Barik Apinu, who ended up being a very highly ranked recruit and having some serious high major interest. It's just that he was a Cheyenne kid, ended up at North Dakota State. I can't imagine they'll have a chance to use that kid for more than the 4-game rule unless things go just absolutely wild. But is there enough football for all these kids? I mean, in today's day and age of the transfer portal, what do you think? Dom, Tamarick, Kobe, Bussey.
There's a million of them.
I know. And so that's kind of what I'm getting at. Do you think, is someone going to feel left out at the end of this?
You know, I think there's always that chance for something like that. But just the system that we play with running backs, you know, if you can cycle in six guys who you trust to carry the rock, then that's perfect for Bison football. So, you know, I think they'll ride their horses. But, you know, competition breeds excellence. And in that room, there's a lot of competition. I'm excited to see who gets to run the rock.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you give Tamarick Williams 12 carries, you give Kobe 8, Bussey gets 4 and another 4 targets in the passing game, and Lupke carries it twice. I think you're feeling pretty good. And then, but like I said, then Cardis and TK Marshall are kind of like, well, guys, what?
We're good football players too.
Right. And that's kind of, I don't know if a concern is the right word, because I'm not sure that I worry about any of these kids with the portal necessarily. But, you know, running backs want the football, man. Yep. That's why they play running back.
Yep. You know, yeah, I mean, I'm glad I'm not making that call.
Oh, for sure.
To be honest with you, because it's a lot of talent you want to keep around the locker room. And those are guys, just knowing from experience, even these young kids, they have their head on the right way. So if anything else, they're culture builders, guys you want. You hate losing people to the portal when it's just a matter of fact that there's 8 good dudes who can run the ball.
Speaking of the portal, I want to fan the flames a little bit. I want to get a take out of you.
Oh, no.
Do you have any, let's say it is Quincy, do you have any portal concern for Cam?
Why are you going to do this?
You're in the media now, baby.
You know, yeah, I'll say it. Yeah.
Okay.
Not overt where I'm like, if he doesn't play down, he's going to leave immediately.
Yeah.
Cam's a damn good football player.
Yeah.
So he's going to find his way on the field one way or another. And, you know, like I said with the running backs, it's just a matter of fact that if there's only one football, there's only one quarterback on the field at a time. Yeah. So, you know, it would be unfortunate if it came down to that. But dude's a heck of a player, and whatever he does, he's going to find his way on the field somewhere.
Fair enough. And I don't think with Cam, like, I don't see – I personally don't see the Thornton-Hendricks path for him to linebacker or safety or receiver.
I wouldn't think so either.
Yeah, I think he's a QB.
Yep, I would agree.
All right. I have a take. Now that if we're going to get heated with it, I have a take.
Yeah, let's go.
I think from – and I love the fullbacks. I think they deserve plenty of respect, and they're a huge part of everything.
What is coming?
What is coming is that I think this is the best group of wide receivers and tight ends in the history of North Dakota State football. If I was going to include the Chiefs, I didn't want to disrespect the fullbacks.
That's fair. I'm glad you made that.
Right. Yeah. So, but I do want to say I think this is the best group in the history of Bison football at wide receiver and tight end. I think you have 3.5 pros, and I'm giving Phoenix a half pro because I need to see it. I haven't seen him in a while. Mm-hmm. I think he can. I think Phoenix has the ability to maybe take that Shep path, you know.
I would agree.
Because I think, honestly, I think the two tight ends, and I know Christian is getting drafted.
Mm-hmm.
I got some heat from an NFC East scout.
Let's go. That's my guy.
I got some heat from an NFC East scout. I'm gonna drop it on you here. This is a we're not going to name names here, but this is a quote from an NFC East scout that I got. Here we go. There's not a single guy in the Big Ten that looks and runs like him.
That's pretty high praise.
Yeah. He said he's got the best body that he's scouted at the wide receiver position this year. Wow.
I mean, he speaks for himself when you see him walk into a room.
Yeah.
You're like, this guy's an alien.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yes, Christian Watson, I will be buying your jersey for whoever you play for, just for on the same page.
So anyways, Watson, Watson is the most gifted wide receiver to ever step. And I've got love for Stacey Robinson.
Yeah.
Although I'm not going to pretend to speak intelligently on Stacey Robinson. I was not alive. And he played, you know, but Cole Heckendorf, my guy.
Right.
We talk about Vra and Ryan Smith, who obviously a very different player. But guys with even Shep, NFL guy, but guys with All American and All Valley credentials, they are not number one.
No, I mean 6'5", 208, and then like, I mean that's an NFL body, but like,
by the way, 4'3" flat.
That might be slow for him.
Flat.
That might be laser time 4.3.
Yeah. I mean, the way that he moves. Now, I think that there are some things, you know, if I'm scouting, I'm looking for a little bit more production. And I know North Dakota State's not throwing it 40 times. I understand that. I'd like to see he's too big and strong and fast to not get more open than he does. I'd like to see a little bit more technical prowess in the way that he runs his routes. And I'd like to see the drops go away a little bit. But outside of that, I mean, he's unbelievable. And then you add into that, man, you're talking about two tight ends that are ready-made pros in Noah Gindorf and Josh Babich. Ready-made.
Both of them. Unbelievable.
100, absolute pro. And then, so now you've got three pros in an FCS offense. I'm talking about Phoenix. And then I've got some guys that I'm really excited to watch, man, in that wide receiver room. I think Braylon Henderson has a chance to potentially be something special as sort of a slot guy that they kind of work in and out with Phoenix. I'm really excited about Bryce Lance, who obviously is the bloodline.
It's hard not to be.
Rajon Nelson is somebody that, whether it's evaluators, our guy Marcus Williams worked with him in camps when he was in high school, talking about just a young man that people rave about. His ability, it didn't show a ton in the spring, but I think he has a chance to be something super special. And then another outside guy that I think's got a shot is Jake Lippi. People remember the Hail Mary and stuff, but I think there's more to Jake Lippi's game than that. People forget he's just a sophomore, man. Like some of these kids taking that leap can be really, really special. And you start talking about the third or fourth option at wide receiver, and they're really the fifth or sixth option in the passing game. You start adding Bussey and Kobe to that. I mean, you're 7-8 options deep in a passing game for a team that honestly doesn't throw the ball that much. And right. that's why I think offensively this could be a really, really exciting season.
Yeah, you know, this is my inner Ram coming out here too. But the cool thing about a wide receiver room, they have this, not ours, but just a position in general has this diva persona that's right. given to them.
Yeah.
But you see guys come up like Cole Jacob and Shep, like guys you mentioned that, you know, they take pride in blocking on the perimeter because yeah. that's where big plays come from. You know, Phoenix, every play he's out there, he's giving it all. It doesn't matter if the ball's even coming near him or if they're even throwing the ball. He is, you know, and that radiates through these guys. Raja, same thing. Jake, I mean, they're all grinders out on the perimeter. And, you know, like I said, as an offensive lineman, I appreciate that.
And I think maybe the most popular kid on the team is Giancarlo. Like, yeah. Nobody has anything to say negative about that kid ever. Like, he is just a grinder's grinder.
And, like, by far the funniest kid on the team, too.
Fair enough.
It's not even close. That's why I love GC.
All right, let's talk about the Rams.
Let's do it.
I've got problems. It has bothered me, and I've made it known on this podcast before you got here, so Coach Larson, you can get off me. I think Sundell's a guard tackle, one of the two. And it's not just like, I mean, any idiot can see him screw up a snap and say he shouldn't play center. That's not why. It's because I think you have a ready-made center in Gray Zabel, a kid that I think fits better there and is probably more comfortable in the position. And I just think from a guard or a tackle perspective, like Sundell's one of your best athletes. I think he's better there, but it doesn't seem like they care what I think. It seems like more likely than not, he's going to be the center. Your guy Nash is going to be the left guard.
Yep.
Cody Tudd is going to be the left tackle. Cody Mouth, the toothless wonder, is going to be the left tackle. And another guy that the NFL loves, Cordell Volson, is going to play right tackle.
For his ninth year.
So what we're trying to, I think, kind of figure out is that right guard spot. And I think the easy answer is Gray Zabel, but I'm not sure we know 100%, you know, where the health is there. I don't want you to speak for Gray. I don't want you to put any info out there, you know, that the staff wouldn't want out there just because I don't need that smoke right now.
Me either.
right. So kind of handicap that race. I know we've got Jake Kubis involved.
Yeah.
Luke LaSalento is a all-pioneer interior offensive lineman that transferred in from the University of San Diego. I think there's a couple different options, even maybe some Cordell at guard with Mason Miller. I know they love Mason Miller out of Ada Borup High School. And Jake Rock got some time last year as well. You mentioned it to me after we walked out of the signing. I'm going to tell on you a little bit. Like, you can't even tell me how long I've heard that they're going to play 7 or 8 linemen. Because you were going to be one of those 7 or 8 linemen. I know.
I would get excited every time.
Right. I think this is a year where that could really happen because of all of the names that just came out of my mouth. I don't think you can not do it. And plus, I think you've got different positions, too. I think you have interior flexibility in whoever doesn't start from the Zabel, LaSalento, Kubis group, and you have tackle flexibility in Mason Miller and Jake Rock. I actually do think they're going to be forced to rotate offensive line. But you're the Ram. You go. I'm going to have you go.
Well, when I just look at this, you know, all the growing pains in the spring, the fastest way to build depth is through growing pains. And these kids were baptized by fire this spring. Mason Miller started his first game in a semifinal game. Jake Rock was in the quarters. You know, like, that's not an easy game for your first start. But, you know, they're developing into really, really, really good football players, and that's what we hang our hat on is depth, because once one guy goes down, the next man's up. You know, just a little insight in what I think about the right guard position. You know, I would think that Gray, being as young as he would lead me to believe that Kubis would be the one that comes out on top of that battle. Both are very good football players, and, you know, you'll be hearing Gray's name for a long time. And but, you know, Kubis looked really good this last spring before going out for surgery there. But I think both of them are healthy as far as I know. So this battle was a full-on battle, and I would probably place my bets on Kubas coming out and playing right guard that first game.
Fair enough. All right. Let's go to the side of the ball that we don't know nothing about if you listen to a lot of people, and that's the defensive side. I want to kind of tackle 2 points, I guess, at once, and that is run defense and just kind of physicality, because this group, I think, has a chance to be super special on the defensive line. You talk about Braden Thomas coming in and Buto from Minnesota State, Mankato, and specifically Braden, maybe being their best defensive lineman last year. I mean, he was awesome. Spence hasn't, I don't think, ever made it all the way back. I think there's some hope for that Wagey can be full-on Superman this fall, and that they've figured out some maybe some orthotic stuff and finally getting that foot right, because he's always been a freak. I mean, he's always been the guy, but you talk about a leader, man, like Logan McCormick, and there's just dudes up and down. Javier Derrett, the Mostart twins. Costner Ching is still around. The love of my life, Lane Tucker, who I've been, you know, trying to get on All-America lists forever. Mm-hmm. And you look at this group, and I look at it on paper, then you got a true freshman in Jackson Duttenheffer that Entz is saying they're not going to be able to keep him off the field at D-tackle.
Right.
And then you go and you watch what happened, what South Dakota State did to them. And, like, these things, they don't add up. They don't – 1 + 2 is not equaling 3.
Right.
And I complained, or I guess I opined, you know, that maybe they were going a little light at linebacker. And, look, I love the idea of positionless football. I love speed and understanding that most of college football is running the spread. So having Kays and Jazeer at outside linebacker is a great idea for most weeks. But when you get a South Dakota team that wants to get in 12 and 22 and 21 and jam it down your throat with Isaiah Wilson and with Pierre Strong Jr. And, by the way, Gronowski, a kid that could run. And I think Oladukun, the transfer kid that's going to play there, can move as well. I don't think he's kind of the statue that Keaton Heidi is or was. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, I think that makes sense. And maybe if it was me, maybe I bring in Wirtz for some will snaps on first and second down,
right,
and play him next to Hanke instead of rotating him with Hanke.
Yeah.
And that those are just kind of my takes. But why do you think that a defensive line that I can list 8, 9, 10 names off and just be in love, why did they get the ball rammed down their throat by Southern Illinois and South Dakota State? How did that happen?
You know, well, you know, I'm going to let a little golden green bleed here, but just the fact that you're getting everybody shot every week.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
And always. You know, that's a given.
You're everybody's Super Bowl.
Right.
Yep.
But, you know, rotating guys and, you know, if it's a hard physical game and, you know, they're grinding out 4 or 5 yards, it's a long, long game to play 60 minutes that way. And that's what those games felt like. It was just death by 1,000 cuts. And you're just, oh, come on, we need to stop, we need to stop. Wouldn't happen. I can't really point to an exact reason why, you know, that would happen. But, you know, like you said, I would probably point towards more the latter part where you were talking about smaller linebackers. You know, you have guys like Wirtz is, like, he's a thumper. He will come downhill, and he will meet you in the hole. And I'm not saying anybody else out there can't, but, you know, guys like Mason Hofstad, like, just bigger bodies, guys that are harder to move. You know, I think sometimes obviously getting stuck in what you think can – you overthink it. To say it plainly,
sure.
You get in and you say, well, these are our 3 guys. We're going to roll with them. Well, sometimes that just doesn't work. You have to switch it up a little bit. So I guess that would be my take on it. I like you said – I'm not. I played on the offensive line,
yeah.
and tried not to talk to Code Green as much as I could, because shout out to Ty Brooks. I didn't like them as much as he did. But I can't point to it, because you look at that D-line, and there are 9 guys deep that are absolute dogs. So where is this coming from?
Right. Why aren't the linebackers? Because that's the theory, right? If that was always what, you know, my guy Brian Schatz would say to me, like, nobody's coming through my gap. So my linebacker is going to be clean. And if you can keep freaks like Kays and Jazeer clean, they're going to make plays all day for you. But if those offensive linemen are able to get up to the second level and you have a 310-pounder on a 204-pounder,
yeah,
you're going to have a problem. And I think that is the – yes, have I been impressed with Kayser's ability to attack a shoulder or to get skinny, to get small, to make a play in the run game when he is severely undersized? I've been impressed, yeah, sure. But on 45 rush attempts, that becomes a problem. That becomes, you know, something that – down in, down out is more of an issue. But ultimately, I don't think that that was and of course, yes, like we're going to focus on the game that ended this season. I think that is both fair and unfair because you're the problems, if you will, of that team were not necessarily all touched upon in 60 minutes against Sam Houston State. And it's a little bit unfair to watch 60 minutes against Sam Houston State and be like, okay, well, Cam doesn't have it. No, he just didn't have it that day.
Right.
And they have a huge problem at corner. That, though, I do think was a legitimate concern. And so that's kind of where I want to go with you now, because I think, you know, I kept talking about, I would really like, I love Jaden Price in zone. You saw the game clinching pick against Central Arkansas was, I believe, in a cover two look where he's got his eyes on the quarterback. I love him looking at the quarterback, making a play, just being an athlete, being like a Trey Dempsey type.
Right.
And I thought he should make a Dudzik style move to free safety. Then we'll get into the problem that we're going to talk about next, is that they've got too many good safeties and they probably don't have playing time for Jaden Price at corner. And then Destin Talbert, very inconsistent, had an awesome week against UND, but then would have rough weeks as well. Anytime you lose a guy like Josh Hayes, you're going to have a problem. But then you get the emergence of Courtney Eubanks, who I thought by the end of the year was the best corner on the team. Mm-hmm. Transfer competition in Gerard Vines from Eastern Michigan, who I believe has 16 starts for EMU, which is impressive. I mean, they're not a great MAC program, but anybody that's played and started football at the FBS level, you have to give a look. And Marquise Siegel, one of the studs from Omaha that are kind of the future of Bison football, I think. He and Tyson Gordon and Cole Payton all work out with Christian Dudzik there at first pick performance and are going to be a big part of the 2022-2023 Bison. But is Marquise Siegel's time now? That you know, I think that's a legitimate question. How do you see that battle shaking out, and have you heard any real big kind of leaps forward from Destin and Jaden? Because I think even though those guys, whatever, got beat, or those guys are sort of the poster children for the deep passes that were completed against them at the end of the season, I don't think they want to be done playing football at North Dakota State either and give up their jobs just because somebody wants to see someone else play.
Right. And, you know, I have full trust that the best 11 are going to play. But, you know, just to qualify, all, like, Jaden Price had the best fall camp I've ever seen out of anybody before that UCA game. You know, it's that consistency part that you're talking about, that down in, down out, you have to be able to cover your guy. And, you know, just my opinion, I think Courtney will probably shake out to be starting here at some point. Like you said, man, like, corners are just – they're little old linemen. They're built different, like – They're wired wrong to be able to do what they want to do. And we talked to Courtney about that at
Courtney's got a short memory.
We talked about that at Media Day. You know, Courtney thinks he can cover anybody.
Right.
And he hasn't proved me wrong on that fact.
So, yeah.
You know, I'd say if he's your best corner, let him run. Let's go with Courtney. Go cover, shut some. What I'm most excited about seeing is whoever it shakes out to be is squashing all of that stuff that comes from outside of the locker room.
Sure.
You know, you're not going to see the big throws because we fixed it. And I think, you know, they're all dogs there. You know, I'm scrolling through the roster here and like guys that are just gritty. And I think it's just that fact that, you know, consistency is huge. So
when Jaden Price locks someone down and points up to me in the press box and said, move this to safety.
Yeah. I'll laugh at you.
That'll be great. Speaking of safeties, though, I mean, I think that's the defensive line in the safety group to me is the strength of Code Green this year. And I think you've got three stone cold studs. I don't think people understand just how athletic Dawson Weber is. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you can kind of speak to more intelligently. But then the leader, the heart and soul in Tut, who I don't think, I mean, just from a, if you took 25, and he'll probably get after me for this, and maybe Bron will too. If you took 25 off his jersey, I just didn't see Michael Tutsy in the spring. And maybe he was battling something, I don't know. But the way he played against Central Arkansas and just dominated, and the way that he played the prior year, you know, in his first kind of full-time role, I expected just a superstar-level spring from him, and I don't feel like I got it. I personally don't feel that way. I think he can bounce back in a major way because I've seen it. I know what it looks like. He is a great football player, and I'm excited to hopefully see that version of Michael Tutsy. And maybe, you know, with Hayes leaving or just in general, he felt like he had more communication stuff on his plate or wasn't able to play as fast. I don't know. You know, everyone's got excuses for whatever. NDSU, not an excuse-based program, certainly. But there are, I think, potential reasons for why I didn't see first-team All-American Michael Tutsy, which is, in my opinion, what he can be. And then the wunderkind, Dom Jones, special athlete around the football, impressive guy. I think everybody kind of fell in love with him and his game when he was able to spell Dawson Weber in that situation. I think you've got some guys to really, really be excited about too, and Tyson Gordon at free and Julian Ledarchik, who is just this giant mass of a human at strong. I think there's some really exciting stuff in that safety room. But the question now is, do you play all three, and how do you play all three? Is it a rotation? Do you play a lot of big nickel? Because I think that inside corner thing is fascinating, and I wouldn't be surprised to see Tut play nickel like Robbie Grimsley did for a while, and you have Tut as a nickel with Weber and Dom behind him. The other thing, though, about playing 200-pound linebackers is you don't have to play nickel.
Right.
You can just detach Jasir and kind of go from there.
Yeah. You know, when you look at Tut, I mean, he is a guy who can go down and stick his nose in the box too. So, I mean, I'm like, there's so much stuff you can do with all three of these, all of these guys. You know, if you want, going back to how special Dom is, if we're talking and Christian wasn't on this team, he would be the guy who'd be like, this is the once in a lifetime type cat that you don't see very often.
Sure.
I mean, he is a freak show. So, you know, I'm glad like we've said before, I'm glad I'm not the one making that decision on how we get all three of them on the field, but I think we do need to see all three of them on the field in whatever capacity that is. You know, you talk to Julian, or you look at Julian, and it's like he's a tight end and runs like these guys, and it's unbelievable. You know, as the safety position is a thing that...
Yeah, and said they got Ledarchik some backer looks, too.
Yeah, as they should. He's unbelievable. And safety position is something that they take a lot of pride in. At North Dakota State, it's just like playing offensive line. There's a rich history of really, really
good football Craig, players. Duds, Robbie, Trey, I mean, Jimmy, you go down the line. Mm-hmm.
And it's unbelievable. I'm excited to see Dawson and Tut hopefully at full speed, ready to go, and then however they mix Dom in, I think is going to be very exciting to see this fall.
All right. Well, Zach, how do you feel like that went?
Went all right. I'm sure I'll get flamed by somebody for using like unbelievable or incredible too many times.
But sorry.
That's how it goes.
Probably all right.
My dad, to be honest.
Folks, thank you so much for listening to Bison Report Radio, brought to you by Big Deck Barbecue Company. Zach, take us out.